We are welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It is called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. It is an insider look at the NBA and the coaches surrounding the league. Every week, the five-time All-Star and the number one pick in the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall, will give his unique perspective on hot topics in the league and tell the best behind-the-scenes stories from his time in the NBA. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Black Tech Green Money isn't just about telling the stories of successful black entrepreneurs. It's also about giving actionable and wealth-building strategies that help you protect the future of our communities. That's why we're pleased to be supported by State Farm Insurance. State Farm also believes that we must invest in our communities to achieve economic growth by sponsoring programs like the AXO, which rewards high school students for their academic achievements. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
What's good, everybody? It is our favorite time of the year here at The Black Effect. We're heading down to Atlanta for the 2024 Black Effect Podcast Festival. And we're not going alone. Nissan is back as our partner, and they're continuing their Pitch Your Podcast Lounge at the festival, where you'll have the opportunity to pitch your podcast idea live and share it with the Black Effect team. So get those podcast ideas ready. And remember, you can count on Nissan to dial up the thrill in your adventures, no matter where life takes you. Visit blackeffect.com/podcast. Festival for more details.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk? Get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't get Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar 20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Wake that ass up early in the morning.
The Breakfast Club.
Morning, everybody. It's DJ NV, Jess Hilarious, Charlamagne the Guy. We are the Breakfast Club. We got a special guest in the building.
Yes, indeed.
Journalist Michael Harriet, an author. Welcome, brother.
Nice to meet you.
How you feeling?
And political commentator.
A little bit of everything.
Yeah, a little bit of everything under his belt.
Native of South Carolina.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
He's got a phenomenal book out, man, called Black AF History, The Unwhitewashed Story of America. I started reading it over the holidays when I was on vacation, and it's one of those books that I've gotten a lot through it, but you keep going back because you're going to have your highlighter.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Constantly going through it. Tell them what the book is about.
The book is a look at America through black people's eyes. So we've seen books about black people through black people's eyes, mm-hmm. and history books about America through the white lens. But this is about America through black people's eyes. And it's funny. Because I talk to people, I wrote the book like how we talk to each other.
Absolutely.
So, you know, we could be at a funeral and we're like, oh God, I can't believe she wore that hat.
That's right.
So, you know, it uses humor. It uses the way we talk to each other, and it shows, and it pulls no punches and unwhitewashes the mythology that we always been taught to believe since we got into social studies class.
You know, I've always followed you on social media, seen your writing on the Griot, and of course you're very funny, but when you read the book, you realize, damn, you had to go through a lot of trauma to get that sense of humor.
Yeah, man. Yeah. I mean, I think that's how we all got our Absolutely. Sense of humor, right? Like it's a coping mechanism in a way, man. And that's how why black people, we relate to each other like that, because we deal with trauma in those ways, and it's always been like that. I mean, mm-hmm. since, like, you know, that's kind of how we created, like, Charlie Case was the first stand-up comedian. I write about it in the book. And his creating a stand-up comedy was an effort to, like, get close to his father, who was an albino man, mm-hmm. an albino black man. And he was a mixed race. And his mom erased, told him, like, you got to live as white. And his hero was his father. So that was a way to get close to his father, because his father was a performer. And he invented stand-up comedy to kind of connect himself to his community after he was removed from it.
Such an interesting concept, right? Because, like, when you think about black people in America, you know, certain people, Jewish people, have been able to assimilate by being able to change their last name. And to read the story about the albino man who was able to assimilate, I'm like, why? That's an act of survival. Like, why wouldn't you in that day? Day and age.
Yeah, man. I talk a lot about that in the book, because mm-hmm. we like, when we talk about, for instance, slave revolts, we always like to talk about, like, how black people grab machetes and mm-hmm. burn down plantation. Mm-hmm. But there were other ways of survive. Like, the chapter is called Survival mm-hmm. and Resistance. So a lot of what we did was just for survival, right? Like, for instance, slowing down your work. You might be mad at that slave owner, but you know what's going to happen if you don't work. So you might just slow down. Mm-hmm. You might just run away for a few days knowing you're going to get caught. But mm-hmm. like, it was like what we would call it self-care now. Like, I know I'm going to get caught, but I'm going to die if I stay on this plantation one more day in a row. Mm-hmm. And so that notion of survival is a lot on how we deal with trauma, man. Like a lot of times when I see, like, black people assimilating into, like, what we call popular culture or, like, that conservative mindset, I know, like, some of the time it's a way of survival. Now, other times you see people buy all into it. Like, I used to think Tim Scott, it was a survival technique for Tim Scott. And then I realized, oh, nah, he's starting to believe in it. Right? Like, there was a shift because I've talked to him before, right? And it was you always got the feeling that he was a conservative, a real conservative, who was in the Republican Party. But, like, lately he just shifted to like MAGA dude, like MAGA black dude.
You said he was embarrassing himself. You said I think you posted a clip on your Twitter that said if I send you a picture of Tim Scott, that means you're embarrassing yourself.
Yeah, right. Now, I mean, and then, like, I'm not one to always, like, perpetuate, like, what they call the Democratic mindset. Mm-hmm. So I would always point out that Tim Scott, for instance, was the only person for years pushing for police reform. Mm-hmm. Right? He tried to get Republicans to pass the Walter Scott Notification Act mm-hmm. for years. Mm-hmm. And then something happened, and then they were on the doorstep of passing police reform, and Tim Scott sabotaged it because of, like, the most powerful man in South Carolina, this sheriff called Leon Lott, ended police reform. Like, one powerful white dude that nobody knows mm-hmm. ended police reform. And Tim Scott, through Tim Scott, right? And lately he's just, like, stopped being that old Tim Scott and become MAGA dude.
I wonder about that, right? Mm-hmm. I agree with everything you just said, but I wonder if that is him trying to survive in a Republican Party that is clearly being taken over by MAGA.
But here's the thing. That would make sense if Tim Scott was somewhere like... Tim Scott is a senator from South Carolina. There is no way
That's MAGA country now.
Yeah, but he's never going to lose if he keeps running. Like, 98% of... One thing people don't realize, 90%, 8% of all senators, when they leave the Senate, they retire. Like, it's almost impossible for a sitting senator to lose. And Tim Scott is in a Republican stronghold. He's never going to be challenged.
What if he got future aspirations, though? What if he has future political aspirations?
Yeah, but is there a political future after Donald Trump? Like, none of it makes sense, right? Mm-hmm. Because he could be Tim Scott, the same Tim Scott he was before Donald Trump, and still have political aspirations, right? Like, he might even be more popular with his party if he wasn't that MAGA dude, right? He bought into a specific kind of anti-black conservative ideology when he didn't have to. And that, like, and you can see the shift, right? He's not even making sense anymore. He was a quiet conservative dude, and now he is a Donald Trump MAGA muffin, an acolyte of that anti-black wing of the Republican Party.
I agree with you. It just feels like if you're a traditional conservative like he was, the MAGA people make you look almost like you're leaning left. So I don't think he wants to look like he's leaning left in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, but I don't think that's necessarily true, because we hear that thing about like the traditional Republicans versus the MAGA Republicans. The traditional Republicans and the MAGA Republicans, there's no really no difference in policy, right? Like all the Republicans are right wing ideologues in truth, right?
The Party of the Confederacy.
Right. So, but that MAGA thing, like, it's just a little bit more anti-black, a little bit more vocally xenophobic, but it's no policy difference. Tim Scott didn't have to buy into all of that. Like, Tim Scott threw his granddaddy. My grandfather was an illiterate poor. Tim Daddy. And he wasn't. It was a lie, right? And he did that to buy into that Republican, not just the Republican ideology, but that MAGA anti-black version of black people that is necessary to perpetuate the myth of the MAGA wing of the party.
I want to go back. For a lot of people that don't know, I'm always curious to how people got their start, right? So what piqued your interest when it came to journalism and politics? What was the first thing that says, this is something that's interesting that I want to do?
Well,
if that was even your journey.
So I'm actually an economist by training. So I was teaching macroeconomics and working for corporations. And this is when Newsweek was owned by the Washington Post.
Mm-hmm.
I used to just write these large policy things that, like, say your company was building something overseas. I'd write, like, what the economic impact it would have on that country. And Newsweek asked me to write these articles about, first, it was why everybody was buying gold. And I wrote it, and it was like, everybody was like, oh, you can really write. I was like, yeah, that's what I kind of do for a living. And from there, what happened is, you know, if you're the only black person in the space, you become the expert on everything black. So when black stuff started happening, even though I was an economist, now I taught a college course called Race as an Economic Construct. So that might be why, but I just became the default expert they come to ask to write about black stuff.
Gotcha.
You know what I love about, Black AF? You break down the history of America at a high level, right? But you also do it in a very entertaining way. And it made me think of a great movie that's out right now called American Fiction, right? And the one problem I had with that movie was the hole that they left about the book Fuck. Have you seen the movie?
Yeah.
I wanted to know why people liked the book Fuck, because I felt like he was such a high-level thinker that maybe he just wrote something that was more easily digestible for people. And it really made me feel like that when him and Erica Alexander had that back and forth in the kitchen, and she liked the book, and she used to like all his original stuff. So I wish they would have explained it in that moment why people like the book. But I think your book, you know, it shows you can put medicine and candy in something and be successful, because you debuted at, what, number 5 on the New York Times bestsellers or something like that?
Yeah. And I think you can do it, right? But I think the difference, like, you know, the book Fuck and American Fiction is, a lot of times to make it in what used to, like, especially 5 years ago, even, in the publishing industry, is you had to dumb it down for the sake of white people, and all kind of pretend that you were kind of stupid, which is something that black people have always had to do in throughout history, right? Like, you couldn't let that white man know you could read or you could die,
right?
Like, you couldn't let the people at your job know you were smarter, because you would be a threat to them. That's where the phrase, the spook who sat by the door, comes from, because, like, affirmative action, they would take really smart people and make them secretaries, but they would have to sit by the door because the people in the back office were scared that they would absorb that knowledge and take their position. So that's something that we always had to do, and that's why, to me, American Fiction was so interesting, because it showed, like, there's this, we were in this moment in publishing, and in, we're still in it, in America in general, where white people were pretending to be interested in black things. Now, it wasn't real, right? Like, take that, you know, 2020 racial reckoning, they call it, right? Like, nothing really happened. They blacked out some memes on Instagram and declared that Black Lives Matter, but, like, the results of that was nothing. Like, the corporations didn't donate the money that they pledged. There was no reform. There were no bills that came out of it. But because of that thing we talked about early, survival, the people who have been maligned and taken a sideline in publishing and in TV, they had an opportunity to take advantage of that brief moment of interest and write some books. And then, so you can see, like, we have a moment in publishing where a lot of black people are getting to speak truth mm-hmm. without doing what Fuck did and kind of dumb it down for white people.
But that's what I said. With you created a book that's super smart, but it's also highly entertaining. I don't think it's dumbed down at all. So I always wonder, like, when somebody is so smart, how come they can't figure out a way to make it digestible for everybody?
I think a lot of that stuff is ego, man, because a lot of smart people want to be seen as smart people mm-hmm. and not relate the information that they use. That's why they use, like, these big old words.
Terrible, right? Communicators.
Right, yeah. Right. And so they want to either communicate to other smart people or to be seen by people who aren't as smart as them as smarter than them, right? And that's part ego. But I think there is a way, because first of all, there's a lot of smart black people who you can communicate with who also know, like, regular people like me and you who know how to relate information. Like, I could talk to you like I'm at the barbershop, and I could talk to you like I'm in an academic setting, right? And I don't have to choose between the two, because if you're smart, then part of being smart is knowing how to convey information right. So that it's digestible to anybody.
Well, most attorneys do that, right? They use big words and use words that come from a thesaurus because they feel like they're going to talk over somebody. And a lot of times they ain't saying shit.
Yeah, yeah. And academics and scholars and, you know, and a lot of times it's because the people we're talking about were picked by the white establishment as somebody who is smart.
Mm-hmm. Expect, break that down.
Because, you know, just we know how media works. We know mm-hmm. how, like, corporations work. Like, journalism is what? Like, at best, 6% black, mm-hmm. right? So when you're talking about the people at the top, for instance, of journalism, those people were picked by a white establishment and kind of endowed with the credentials to speak a lot of times for black people.
But does it matter if the person that's speaking cannot galvanize an audience? Like, if you get put in that position and you're not able to, you know, energize people and make people gravitate towards you, does it even matter?
But that assumes that you're there to energize and get black people to listen and not validate things for white people. I'll give you an example, right? Mm-hmm. So a couple of weeks ago, there was a black reporter who went down to near where I live in Georgia and interviewed black people about, like, why Biden might lose in rural Georgia.
Oh, I read that article.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was in the Washington Post, I think.
The Times,
right. Yeah.
But the interesting thing about that article was, like, I live literally 5 minutes from the place. She wasn't interviewing, like, regular black people, right? Because, first of all, specific town where she has one of the highest voter registration and participation rates. And she was talking about, first of all, she was talking to college students who weren't going to be able to, like, she was asking people why they wouldn't vote for Biden. And they were saying, well, Biden cut off my food stamps and I'm a college student. Like, out of that whole subset, mm-hmm. why would you talk to somebody who didn't have the right information, right? When there's so many people. Because you dare to perpetuate the narrative, right? And so a lot of times you're not there to get a black audience. You're there to validate the same opinions that white people have already held about black people. That's why we see this thing about, you know, why is the Republican Party going to be attractive to black people? Look, I can tell you, never in the history of America since black people have been able to vote, have black people voted for the conservative party, whether it was the Democrats or the Republicans at the time. It's not going to happen. It's never going to happen. Every year.
It's not going to happen at the number they're saying. Huh? I think right now they say it's 22%. They'll never get 22% of the black vote. I don't think so.
Yeah, it's not going to happen. And
it will go up, though. I think it'll be a bump.
But here's what you have to ask yourself, right? So black people make up 12% of the voting electorate, right? Mm-hmm. So if it goes up by 5 points. That's less, like, that's less than a half of a percentage of the total electorate, right? Mm-hmm. Like 5 points with black people is, especially if you're talking about black men, is less than half a percentage. So why would you even write an article or perpetuate this narrative and have it in multiple newspapers? Like, it's not just like the New York Times is talking about this. It's the Washington Post. It's the Wall Street Journal. It's the LA Times talking about the same thing when it's such a small, it cannot decide an election.
When the
black
election,
men turning conservative cannot decide an election.
As close as the elections have been lately. And this one, I think what I've been saying this year is that, you know, you're going to have to, it's going to be the Republicans who are the criminals. You know, the Democrats who are the cowards because they don't fight enough, and the couch, which is voter apathy. And I think that a lot of Democrats are focusing too much on what Republicans are doing when they need to focus the energy on the people on the couch.
Right.
Right. So if the Republicans were able to get, I don't know, 2%, 3% of black voters to increase, as close as the election might be, you don't think that could?
Nah, because see what you're talking about, first of all, leaves out the fact that there's this thing called the Electoral College.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So where the Democrats win states is in large black enclaves in large city states with large cities.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a 2 or 3% swing even in those cities, it's not going to do anything, man. Like, we keep talking about about politics in such broad terms, especially when you talk about the black vote, when we never focus on this fact, right? Like, most white people in America are going to vote for a man with 21 criminal charges, and we're talking about what
91.
Black people, 91 criminal charges, and we're talking about what black people do, not what we know white people are going to do. Right? Like, we know white people are going to vote for the racist, xenophobic, criminal, scam artist, ignorant dude, and we're talking about what 0.5% of the electorate is going to do. Mm-hmm. It's gotta be a narrative, and they get back black people, back to what you asked, black journalists to rubber stamp it by talking about that dumb, stupid narrative to verify that it's a thing.
Why do you think that is, right? Because, like, you know, when I get on these platforms, I've been saying the same thing, like the whole electorate is dissatisfied, right? Like, you got, you know, yesterday I saw a poll that said Biden would lose by, I think, 40 points in a general election to Trump, and the polls are down for him with younger voters and independents and Latinos and Asians and black people. Why do you think it's just focused on black?
Because you can't talk about, like, it turns white people off to even say the words white people. You can't talk about what white people are going to do. And, like, and then again, you have to realize this goes back to the original premise of the argument, is that those newsrooms are 92 to 94% white.
Mm-hmm.
Those white people, that's not a narrative. They don't even see things through that lens. Just like, for instance, the New York Times doing that thing on Travis Kelce's haircut.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Now, we, as absurd as in all the jokes were, right, what it really was about is that entire chain of command was filtered through a white lens. Like, there couldn't have been any black person as an editor in that newsroom who said, what do you mean popular? Like this haircut has been popular for a while. Now that lens is, it's popular now for white people.
I can just tell from that, right, that, like we said this morning, that they don't see us.
Right.
Like, they don't open their eyes to see that we've had fades for.
Yeah, but Mike, you make all skin folk and kin folk.
Right.
Every nigga don't know about that fade.
Yeah, but
they should.
Yeah,
they do.
But what I'm saying is, I don't even care about what the white people in the black people in the newsroom did, right? It is a white lens to think that something is popular now because white people see it and start doing it.
Absolutely.
That, like, they talk about critical race theory in the reverse sense, that, like, why do we have to look at it from a black perspective? Because they don't realize that they've been seeing things all of this time from a white perspective.
Absolutely. I wanted to ask you something. You was talking about, when you talking about Tim Scott. Do you think black people, period, right, when it comes to Democrats or Republicans, is there ever any reason for us to be acting the way he acts over politicians? Because black Democrats, I be seeing the way these black Democrats act over the Democratic Party, too, and it all look the same. It's all the same energy of the, I love you. Like, do you think there's any reason for black people to be acting like that over any politician, regardless of party?
Nah, there isn't, because I think, like, what Tim, that little dance that Tim Scott, first of all, I've seen black people do that over Democratic politicians. Yes. Now, like, I want to be clear, but the thing about black people in politics in general, man, is a lot of times we don't realize, like, black people have been through what? Like, 20 elections in the history of black, like, we were just able to vote like 20 presidential elections ago.
Damn.
Right? Like we did this 20 times in the history of black people. Right? And the other thing is, though, that a lot of that criticism is premised on the fact that the black people in the Democratic Party are cool with how the Democratic Party has worked. Like, we criticize it internally and amongst each other. Like, we know that the white Democrats in the Democratic Party are racist too. Like, they ain't less racist than the white people in the Republican Party. Right? Like, we know that, and mm-hmm. we have the same criticisms, right? But I don't think you have to shuck and jive. Like, what Tim Scott is doing is shucking and jiving for Tim Scott.
I agree with you, but I feel like so many black people have done that too. I'll give you some examples. Bill Clinton, the first black president. Uncle Joe Biden. God damn, what have these men done for you that you call him Uncle Joe and say that he's the first black president?
Well, first of all, I think there's a difference, right?
I don't.
I do in this sense, right? Even though I kind of agree with you, but calling Bill Clinton the first black president don't do nothing, right?
But think about why they used to call him that.
Because he played the saxophone.
And because he used to smoke weed.
He used to smoke weed.
Like, he was good with women. Like, it wasn't even for nothing positive.
Well, yeah, but I think a part of that was too, like, he was a southern poor dude from Arkansas too. But I agree with you. Like, I don't think it was good to call him the first black president. But Bill Clinton didn't win because black people were calling him the first black president. Bill Clinton, Joe Biden didn't win because people was calling him Uncle Joe. Tim Scott is trying to help a xenophobic, racist, anti-black man win by dancing.
Mm. But he not gonna win because Tim Scott was dancing though.
But the attempt is, and the fact that he is positioning himself, because Tim Scott really is positioning himself to be the black, to be the VP pick, I think.
Head of HUD. That's the best he's going
to
get.
But regardless of what it is, mm-hmm. right, like, to be a bigger part of that anti-black machine. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, the person who said to Bill Clinton is the first black president wasn't part of it, didn't get a lollipop from the Democratic Party for it. They didn't become part of the machine. Same thing with Joe Biden. There was just some dumb stuff that people were saying, you know, amongst each other in barbershops and everything. But
it was Congress people who said this.
We're welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It's called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. It's an insider's look at the NBA and the coaches surrounding the league. Every week, the five-time All-Star and the number one pick in the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall, will give us his unique perspective on the hottest topics in the league and tell the best behind-the-scenes stories from his time in the NBA. CJ will be bringing his A-list comedian buddies to keep it light and fire off some hoop takes. Plus, John will be inviting current and former NBA players, friends, and teammates to join the show as well to give their unfiltered accounts of what really goes on in the league from a player's perspective. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, everybody, this is Carrie Champion, and I'm here to announce that the 2024 Black Effect Podcast Festival is headed to Atlanta's very own Pullman Yards on April 27th. Last year was incredible, and this year will be even more thrilling, especially with Nissan coming back along for the ride. Nissan is returning with some empowering activations to support Black excellence in the STEAM fields. Have a podcast idea you've been eager to share with the culture? Well, Nissan is back with your Pitch Your Podcast Lounge. You'll have the chance to record your podcast idea and have it shared with the Black Effect Podcast Network team. But that's not all. Nissan is taking the stage to spotlight some of the HBCU scholars from their own Thrill of Possibility Summit, Nissan's action-packed weekend of community building, mentorship, and professional development for HBCU scholars pursuing professions in STEAM. The Black Effect Podcast Festival is the event you want to be at. You don't want to miss it, because no matter where life takes you, Nissan will dial up the thrill in your adventures. Visit blackeffect.com/podcastfestival for more details.
State Farm Insurance gets it. Representation alone doesn't equate to authenticity. State Farm understands and wants to help protect our communities by investing in our future, building off the hard work our parents have done before us. We all are looking to create generational wealth so that our families and generations behind us have a better starting point than we did. That begins with financial literacy. State Farm helps fund programs like Project Ready, a National Urban League program committed to the educational achievement of Black and Brown youth. To date, participants have been awarded over $11 million in scholarships offers as a direct result of contributions from State Farm. At Eating While Broke, we hear inspiring rags-to-riches stories on each episode from our guests, but with State Farm, you can begin to write your own success story. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities and have a long-lasting impact. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Opportunity is not equally distributed. To every Black entrepreneur listening, I want to make sure you have the tools and resources you need to grab your next opportunity. That's why I'm telling you about the 1 Million Black Businesses Initiative. The 1 Million Black Businesses Initiative is an award-winning program created by Shopify and Operation Hope. They're on a mission to start, grow, and scale 1 million Black businesses by 2030, driving wealth creation for the Black community. Out of 6 million employer-owned businesses in the U.S., only 2.3% have Black ownership. This program gives Black entrepreneurs tools and resources to level the playing field, from free business coaching to tailored training and extended free Shopify trial. Shopify's made a 10-year, multi-million dollar commitment to the program, and it's working. The initiative already started, supported, and engaged with over 334,000 Black businesses, helping them operate businesses that sell anything from skateboards to coffee beans to apparel. Business owners love this program. Simone Harvin, founder of SC Creative Group, says, "The 1 million Black businesses experience for me was unlike any other program I've been a part of, primarily because it was for us and it was by us. Here at Drink Champs, we are always interacting with our listeners, many being Black entrepreneurs. Shopify is one of those platforms that empowers and emboldens entrepreneurship. So chart your own path for business success with the 1 million Black Businesses Initiative and Shopify. Bring your business to Shopify with an exclusive 120-day free trial at shopify.com/BEN, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/BEN.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us, wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk. Get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't get Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with the premise, mm-hmm. but Tim Scott is a single person, right? We're not talking about like an ethos. Tim Scott is a single person who is trying to use his Blackness as a cudgel against Black people yeah. by verifying and validating the most racist political machine in the country.
Do you think Black people are politically fatigued, tired of this shit, tired of the conversations and the talk over and over again, tired of the selling the dreams, tired of the car sales people feel? Do you think that's going to stop a lot of people from going out?
I think it might. Like, one of the things that might is that at some point there is going to have to be a reckoning with the Democratic Party mm-hmm. and saying you have to stop giving us lip service and start doing the stuff that you say. But one of the things that people say, well, we can't do it this year because what if Trump wins? Mm-hmm.
They do that every election. Right.
That's what I'm saying.
Every election they tell us that.
Now, the second part of that sentence is that the difference in this time is a lot of Black folks are going to say, I ain't scared. He already been president.
I lived through him.
Yeah, I lived through him once, right?
I lived through both
Bush and
Reagan.
Right? That's what might attract people to the couch, because we lived through a Trump presidency. I agree that we're going to have a reckoning with the Democratic Party, too, right? Because ain't nothing we can do. But I think it's wrong to equate the racism of inside the Democratic Party with the points of the Republican Party is white supremacy, right? Like, that's the goal, is to keep power among white people, and they weaponize it with their policies and who they attract to their coalition.
I agree with you. I think that's Democrats' fault, though, because, you know, they demonize every single Republican candidate every time it's an election. And now that there's an actual real threat to democracy,
a real demon,
we like, please, we done heard that story before.
Right. And then the other side of that, though, is they might be able to fight that better if they said, hey, you know that demon? We got the answer to kill that demon.
That's right.
Right? But the policies that we put forth, because it's not like black people have a new agenda. We've been pushing the same agenda since like the 1979 Indiana summit, right? We've been pushing the same agenda. Like, that's why we kind of dismissed Ice Cube, right? Because we knew that what he was saying was nothing. Why do we want a rapper going to plead our case in the White House? Like, we don't even want to vote for nobody who would even talk to a rapper versus somebody who would know our agenda policy-wise. But
you wouldn't want to vote for somebody who spoke to a rapper?
No. What I'm saying is, if you are going to make time to address black people's needs, and you're going to invite someone to speak to you and see what you might be missing, if you invite Ice Cube and say, like, that's the one who I need to talk to about what black people want, then you probably just a performative person who just trying to get votes and pander to black people.
Well, that's why Ice Cube got to bring the right people with him. I mean, I feel like that's where the entertainment and the experts go hand in hand, right? Like, if I get that invite, take somebody with you who knows what they're talking about.
Well, but here's the thing, right? If you are an expert who could really talk to Ice Cube, wouldn't you have told him that, hey, this agenda already exists? Like they know about this stuff. Like, Tavis Smiley wrote about it. It was in the 1979 Political Black Summit. It's the same, like, literally the same stuff. Like, the same bullet points, the same policy goals, everything. And if he had the right people around him, he would have known, like, oh, all right, what I'll do is I'll get behind the experts who have already been pushing this agenda, then trying to make it about, not just about himself, but being mad when we didn't recognize the absolute unique genius of Ice Cube, right? Right, like, he went on Tucker Carlson.
I think we're saying the same thing, though. It's just like, yes, these agendas have already been out there, but I think we gotta keep them in these people's faces, because these people have every reason to ignore us.
Right, right. But that's why Ice Cube should be saying, I am going to get behind these smart black people, right? Because
instead of saying, this is my agenda that I wrote.
Or not even just saying that it is mine, right? Like, just like Ice Cube has a lot of capital in black America, right? He could be uplifting some of the people who are scholars, who are the people who have been doing the work for years and years. But Ice Cube said, I want to be in that room, and you need to talk to me, Ice Cube. Right? And I think there's a bit of ego in that, that is to the detriment of black people.
Why
right?
You say that?
Because let's say they did invite Ice Cube there, and Ice Cube said all the right things. Mm-hmm. Like, don't it just perpetuate the same myth that these stupid rappers and these stupid entertainers and many of them who haven't done the work, but they have good intentions, are the representatives for black people?
But what if Cube actually gets it done?
Like, Kim Kardashian gets things that people say she gets things done when it comes to prison reform, right?
I just saw something come out here.
Right?
Right? Okay, you watch that back, it's going to be so funny.
People have said that, right? People have said Donald Trump listened to Kim Kardashian before he listened to a politician.
But there's women behind Kim that have actually done the work. Right. Black women behind Kim. I can't remember the sister's name. We had them up here, too.
We had them up here.
I'm so sorry. I can't remember.
Two black female lawyers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Two lawyers.
And that is the point, right? Like, if Ice Cube can get you into the room, I ain't got no problem with that, right? But, and I ain't even got no problem with Ice Cube asking to be in the room.
Okay.
Right? But when Ice Cube was told, hey, you can't be in the room, he switched up and would say, well, I can go talk to Donald Trump. And then he elevated the purveyor of the white genocide, the white replacement theory, Tucker Carlson, went on his show. When Tucker Carlson didn't even have a toehold in media, Ice Cube helped him get that, help him gain that audience, validated his belief by saying he can't be racist because he's sitting here talking to this dude who is pushing an agenda for black people, right? Like, that is why you don't want the people who are driven by ego in the room, because if they don't get in the room, right, he switched to the enemy side, really.
So let me ask you a question, right? So the Breakfast Club here has had...
Oh, hold on. I got to say their names. Brittany, Kay Barnett, and me, Angel Cody.
Yes. Salute to them. They was up here.
Yes.
So the Breakfast Club has had politicians up here that necessarily weren't on our side, right? Mm-hmm. Republicans here. So what's your thought on that? Because a lot of people have said, why do you give those Republicans the platform?
As if they don't already have a huge platform.
Why do you allow them up there and have the conversation?
They're not on CNN, MSNBC, Fox, all
well, the why do you up here and have them spew things that are not necessarily best for our community?
So it's two sides of that, right? Like, mm-hmm. I think if you're going to have those people on, you have to be equipped to counter the narrative that you know they're going to push, right? Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of times, again, because of ego, we think that I'm equipped, I'm smart enough to, and it ends up being that person promoting the ideology, you giving a person a platform to promote anti-black ideology or anti-black narrative. The other thing is that, just like you said, they got enough platforms, right? Like, I don't necessarily disagree with the intellectual curiosity or the ability to say, look, I am probably what a lot of people would call progressive, pro-black, or whatever. Mm-hmm. And my viewpoint can stand up in the face of somebody like Nikki Haley or Republican, and I'm going to show you that it can, because I'm going to have them in this space, right? I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But I think a lot of times when some people do it, right, it ends up being counter to the point that they brought them into.
Counterproductive, right.
Right, like Ice Cube going on Tucker Carlson. Tucker Carlson wiped the floor with Ice Cube. He bent Ice Cube into a pretzel.
They were debating? I never watched it. I didn't watch it.
They weren't debating, right? Mm-hmm. Tucker Carlson is an experienced media person, so he knew how to get Ice Cube to say what he want. Like, Ice Cube has criticisms of people like Oprah and the people at the top of the power mm-hmm. structure, right? Mm-hmm. But if that's the only thing you say, and Tucker Carlson manages to manipulate you into saying just bad stuff about black people, you weren't equipped to do that. And now we're supposed to still believe that Ice Cube is equipped to go into those rooms and represent us when we see what these white folks one-on-one can twist you in their pretzel and make you sound like and make you look like, right? Mm-hmm. And that's the thing, right? Like, there is kind of a dividing line where you can have that robust intellectual debate with people from the other side if you are equipped. If you're not equipped to do it, you also have to invite people who are equipped to do it into the room when you have them on your platform. Those people like, you know, Republicans, conservatives, which I'm not afraid to do.
I think in this era, people like confrontation over conversation, because what's the point of platforming Democrats? Because when we have Democrats up here, it's the same thing, just from a whole other side. It's people that say, all they did was lie about this. All they did was lie about that. You didn't challenge them enough on this. You didn't challenge them enough on that. So it's literally the same thing. If you have Democrats on, you're going to have some people that are mad. You have Republicans on, you're going to have people that are mad. There's not one politician I've ever seen come on, maybe one or two, that actually made people be like, oh. What they said was actually
but,
interesting.
Yeah, but that's kind of how you know you on the right path if you in media, right? Like if both sides are upset by something you did,
Absolutely. Then you probably
kind of were fair, right? Like I call it like my Dr. Umar thing. Like Dr. Umar don't like me because I've been critical of him.
You have a white wife?
Huh? No.
Oh,
hell no. I'm sorry. People love who you love, but no. But Dr. Umar was mad at me because I was critical of him, like of how he raised money and some of the stuff he said about gay people. Mm-hmm. And the reason people know that Dr. Umar is Dr. Umar is because I did the journalism and actually validated his PhD. So,
and people got mad at you for that.
And people was mad at me. The Dr. Umar haters was mad at me because you validated him. And what I'm trying to do is be fair, right? And so if both sides are kind of mad at you, you probably know you were doing the right thing and you were at least fair.
Yeah. But when do you get to the point where you can have a real conversation, right? I remember Floyd Mayweather back in the day where, you know, 10 years ago, he was, I like Donald Trump, right? And people were canceling him and this, that, and the other. But when do we have a point where we can have a conversation and be like, all right, Floyd, this is your opinion. Why? And then have a conversation because he might not know some of the things that Floyd say, or there might be something that you say that somebody might not know, but you'll never get to that point if we can't have a conversation. And the first thing is, like he said, is confrontation.
Well, I think we can have that conversation. Like, I do it all the time. Like, when I hear stuff that people who I disagree with say, the first thing I do is try to get in contact with them and see why, mm-hmm. or try to research and see why. We can have that conversation. Now, the thing is, a lot of times, like, because of social media, because of the way the world works, yep. right? Like, the nuances of that conversation are never going to be talked about or seen because it can't fit into a 2 minute and 20 second clip. Mm-hmm. But we can have the conversation. And I think that's on us to do, because if you have a platform like The Breakfast Club, you can have those conversations in long form and explore those things. And you don't have to have a hot take all of the time, because it's always going to be a hot take, right? Right.
Of course.
And you're always going to, like, the pushback is kind of a reflection of how popular and how impactful you are. Because, like, if I did it, I'd have way less pushback sometimes than what you guys do, because you got a bigger platform.
What them hip hop dudes talking to them politicians
but
for?
The other thing is, right, here's the thing. If you do something with a platform that gets as big as yours or mine, right, and 80% of the people like it, well, 90% of that 80% are just going to say, yeah, I like that, and just go on. Those 20% that don't like it are going to scream at you on social media. Yeah. So the people who like it don't ever say anything. They Correct. Just like it and move on. Mm-hmm. Like, so the people who are, for lack of a better word, anti you or haters are always going to be the loudest.
The reason I like reading not just, you know, your book, Black AF, but your articles, is because of what you look at things from an objective lens. I remember an article you wrote one time, and it was about Tim Scott's police reform bill. And I want to say it was the George Floyd police.
Yeah.
I think it was the Walter Scott bill and the George Floyd. And if I'm not mistaken, you said Tim Scott's bill was better.
Yeah. Tim Scott's Walter Scott Notification Act would have required every police department in America to notify, not just when, because first of all, most people don't know that, like, no one in America, in the whole world, knows how many black people police kill every year, because there's no mechanism to report police killings, right? So Tim Scott's bill would have not just notified you of the federal government every time a police officer killed someone, but every time a police officer fired their gun, it would have the name, age, race of the person they were firing at, all of that, right? And so that part of Tim Scott's bill.
That's why I was going to tell you, that's wild that's not recorded. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I thought every time a police officer shoots his firearm, that it's had to be documented, and it had to be.
And some police departments it does, right? But then it stays in that police department. It's going to have to go to a state agency or federal agency. So we don't know, mm-hmm. right? Like, the things that you see about the numbers of how many people are killed by police, those are from media reports of on-duty police officers who kill someone only with their gun. Mm. Right? Like,
oh, wow.
Like, when you
like
see
a
those
choking or something. Okay.
Like, George Floyd isn't in the police killing database.
Wow.
Like, Eric Garner is not in the police killing database.
Wow.
Right. So it's only people who are shot and killed by on duty police officers. Mm. Right. So Tim Scott's bill was better. Right. But then Tim Scott sabotaged it because
you want to scrap qualified immunity.
Nah, because of the National Sheriff's Association headed by Leon Lott, who is the most powerful man in South Carolina. And they didn't want to give up that power to the federal government because of this white supremacist ideology. And y'all can look it up and Google it, the constitutional sheriff's idea that sheriffs are above the Constitution. Mm. Like they don't, they are the enforcers of the Constitution. They are kind of above the Constitution. And it's a white supremacist movement that nobody writes or talks about. Wow. And that's who sabotaged police reform.
So I thought people didn't like Tim Scott's bill because he didn't want to scrap qualified immunity.
Well, that was one of the things, the differences between like the Democrats' bill mm-hmm. and Tim Scott's. But that's not what sabotaged it, because really qualified immunity isn't a really deal breaker. And to tell you the truth, right, like a federal police reform bill can only do so much, right? That's the importance of knowing about politics, right? Because right. the federal government doesn't control police officers, and they don't control what the laws that govern police officers. What the federal police reform bill would have been was a mechanism to control the federal funds that police departments get, right? Because they can't govern police departments. That is a state level bill. So we should be trying to make this movement a state level movement, and that's why knowledge of politics is important. Because the federal government really can't do anything but say, hey, if your police department doesn't use body cams, mm-hmm. then you don't qualify for these federal funds that we give police departments every year, right? And that's all the federal government can do. All
right. So why do we let these Negroes get away with saying the Biden administration, they did ban the use of chokeholds and no-knock warrants when we know that's on a federal level?
Right, because of a lack of knowledge about politics, mm-hmm. because, again, we don't have these conversations, these long-form, deeper conversations, because people believe what they read on social media instead of investigating it for themselves, because the FBI and the Secret Service are the only entities or agencies that can be banned from using no-knock warrants and chokeholds. Now, what we can say is, if you're the police department, don't ban no-knock warrants and chokeholds, then you won't get the federal funds to buy body cams or to buy police armor or mm-hmm. stuff like that. Now, you can withhold funds, but you can't really tell police departments, hey, y'all can knock on somebody's door or go in without a no-knock warrant.
We're talking to Michael Harriott, the author of Black AF History, The Unwhitewashed Story of America. Another thing I love about the book is it shows how when it comes to America, nearly everything started in South Carolina.
Yeah, that's
everything.
That's always been one of my premises for like years, even before I began writing the book, is that my thing is the capital of Black America. If there is such a thing as Black America, then its capital is in South Carolina. 40% of all the people who were enslaved in America came through South Carolina. Mm-hmm. And if you talk about just spending time in South Carolina in a port or something like that, it goes up to 90%.
That's right.
Right? Mm-hmm. So Black America, like all of the laws, like the law that stopped cities from being able to segregate buses didn't come from the Montgomery bus boycott. Right. That what came from a South Carolina bus protest years before the Montgomery bus boycott. As a matter of fact, when Montgomery went to federal court and took their case to the Supreme Court, the reason it's not a Supreme Court case is because the Supreme Court said, oh, yeah, we already decided this in South Carolina. Right. So everything starts in South Carolina. All of the laws that govern the enslaved are because of a slave revolt in 1739 in South Carolina.
Yeah, I think most people, if they do their family history, they'll see a relative that came from South Carolina, their mama's from South Carolina, their father is from, if they're Black. Caribbean yeah. is different, but if they're Black, like my mom just showed me a picture. It was her baby picture, and she's from South Carolina. And she showed me, she was like, look, we was broken poor in South Carolina. Look at the back. But like, you understand, but that's where the initial thing came from.
And the other thing that I talk about in the book and we don't know is that the Caribbean connection, because most mm-hmm. of the enslaved people from South Carolina were shipped in from the Caribbean, mm-hmm. right? Like South Carolina was basically first created by a group of white people who had plantations in Barbados.
Oh, wow.
Right? So they brought enslaved people from the Caribbean mm-hmm. and then started going back to Africa, to the rice coast of Africa, when they realized, hey, these people know how to grow rice. And there's a whole chapter in the book on like how rice built America. And like before South Carolina and Black people in South Carolina started growing rice, most people don't know, for instance, like slaves were 80% Black. They weren't creating other slaves because they were just importing black men. Mm-hmm. But black women were the one who knew how to grow rice and knew the agricultural technology. So that's when they started enslaving more black women. And that's how it became about one-to-one in America.
Have you been to the International African American Museum yet?
Yeah. I was there on opening weekend.
Okay.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, man. I love this book. All this stuff that you're talking about is stuff that we got taught a little bit growing up in Charleston. Not the way we should have. But
Charleston, people in Charleston know a lot more than people everywhere else just because, it's something that you can't ignore in Charleston.
Stonewall Rebellion, Denmark Vesey. You're going to learn about all of that.
It feels like it's in the dirt there. We're here in New York. Growing up, they tell you, you learn about Frederick Douglass, you learn about Rosa Parks, you learn about Martin Luther King, you learn about Malcolm X, you learn about those people, and that's it.
Right. And a lot of it is because, those people, the black people in Charleston, it was passed down, not in schools, but by the people who were involved in it.
That's right. I encourage anybody, if you go to Charleston, just go on a tour. Just get one of the brothers and sisters to take you on a tour of downtown Charleston, and you'll get all of that, and go to the International African American Museum, and buy Black AF History, the unwhitewashed story of America from South Carolina's own Michael Harriet. Tell them where to follow you, Michael.
We appreciate you joining
I'm
us.
On all social media as MichaelHarriot. I write weekly, three times a week for The Griot, and have The Griot Daily Podcast, where I talk about the same stuff we're talking about here. Not with guests, it's just me explaining stuff. So The Griot Daily Podcast. You can find me on social media under my name on all platforms.
Michael Harriet, ladies and gentlemen, it's The Breakfast Club. Good morning.
Wake that ass up early in the morning.
The Breakfast Club.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us, wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk. Get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't get Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.
State Farm Insurance knows that understanding and investing in our cultural identity is paramount in protecting our future. We know what it's like to go from nothing to something, to wish that we had better financial literacy when we were younger. Luckily, State Farm is here to help with funding programs like Project Ready, which is committed to education achievement and has already awarded over $11 million in scholarship offers to Black and Brown youth since 2021. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
What's good, everybody? It's our favorite time of the year here at The Black Effect. We're headed down to Atlanta for the 2024 Black Effect Podcast Festival, and we're not going alone. Nissan is back as our partner, and they're continuing their Pitch Your Podcast Lounge at the festival, where you'll have the opportunity to pitch your podcast idea live and share it with the Black Effect team. So get those podcast ideas ready. And remember, you can count on Nissan to dial up the thrill in your adventures, no matter where life takes you. Visit blackeffect.com/podcastfestival for more details.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
AT&T connects an ode to podcast. Connect the alarm, change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze, 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower, lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work and traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.